This is the podcast for Thursday, February 10th, 2011. Theories of reality.
Okay, so the first thing I want to be clear on is the definitions. You'll have three definitions on the test. Well, not three total, but you'll have three definitions which will definitely be on the test. Libertarianism, determinism, and compatibilism. You might, you know, open up the test and the first question might be, you know, libertarianism is a view, you know, which says blah, you know, get your choices. So it's important to be clear on these and also to understand the concepts, not just to memorize the words. So a libertarian is someone who believes you have the power to do otherwise. They believe in the kind of normal concept of free will as the power to do otherwise under identical circumstances. Now, if the circumstances are different, of course, you'll do something different. Just like in the same way, if you know, that you could be a determinist and say, sure, I could have done something different. If the circumstances had been different, of course I'd do something different. If I was born in Egypt, I might favor the stoning of adulterers, right? If my father had been a sports fanatic, I might have watched the Super Bowl, right? So with libertarianism, the libertarianism says you have the power to do otherwise under identical circumstances. A determinist could say you have the power to do otherwise if the circumstances were different. So that's why it's important to add under identical circumstances. And what the determinist will say when a person does something unexpected or something that's not predicted or something that's unusual, they'll say there's something different in those antecedent conditions which cause a different result. It's like if someone has a tech issue and they say, you know, well, I've been doing this the same way every time, and suddenly it's not working. And your tech guy's going to say, well, that's not possible. So, you know, and he like maybe does a hardware check and he's like, you must have done something. And you try to figure out what it was. And maybe, you know, you did everything the same except for you forgot to, you know, click some key or something like that. Or maybe you got a new keyboard, you didn't tell him that, and instead of the option key, it's got an alt key, and you're not pressing the alt key, you're pressing the control key, because you confused them, and you just forgot to mention that. So when you get a different result, if you're a determinist, there has to be different circumstances, different causes. Different causes lead to different effects. But if you're a determinist, the same effects always lead, or the same causes always produce the same effects. And so, like the kid that grows up in the ghetto, right, and he's, you know, and he's got everything going against him, but somehow he manages to become a productive citizen, maybe have wild success, and maybe he becomes president. Is that free will? No, the determinist will say, that's not free will. What's happening there is that there's some cause that you haven't figured out yet, which makes him different from all his friends who end up in jail, dying of overdoses, you know, or you know, working menial jobs after having dropped out of high school. Yeah?
Doesn't the libertarian philosophy imply that you could take one instant in time and like divide it into multiple instants? Because to say, like, even if...
I don't think it assumes that metaphysics now. I mean, you get have numerous views on time with the libertarianism. Like, it just says, after you did something, like, you know, you shot up Coke and robbed the 7-Eleven store, right? So, well, you could have stayed home and, you know, watched a Steven Seagal movie, right? You could have gone out to the soup kitchen to help the homeless. There's a number of different things you could have done. What you did do, though, is you shot up Coke and robbed the 7-Eleven store. Now, the libertarian says, you did do that, but you could have done something else. The determinist said, if that's what you did, you couldn't have done anything else. The compatibilist says, you couldn't have done anything else. But as long as you chose to do what you do and no one was coercing you, like no one tied you up and got you hopped up on cocaine and then forced you at gunpoint into the liquor store, the 7-Eleven store, and said, come out with all the money or your girlfriend gets it or whatever, then that's coercion. That's not freedom. But the compatibilist, remember, is also a determinist. They just say that those determined actions, which are caused by your desires or your decisions, even though all those decisions are determined, even though all those desires are determined, that those choices, which are not coerced by an external person or force, that those things are free. So that's how you can be determined free if you're a compatibilist. You're doing what you want to do. You're doing what you've decided to do. You're doing something because you have certain reasons for doing it. The last cause in that causal chain is you making some decision, you being motivated by some desire. So that's your decision is your action is still determined, but the compatibilist wants to say it's free if the cause is you, your decision, your desire, your reason, and you're acting on the reason that you have, as opposed to someone threatening you or coercing you. Or literally forcing you, like you maybe someone defrauds you, and then like a friend invites you to a Halloween party, right? And it turns out like it's a satanic black mass, and then they bring out like the little baby, and then one of the guys like the big burly guy is like holding you in place while another guy like grabs your hand and puts a dagger in it and stabs the baby over and over again. Right, that's not free will, because now even though you're caused to do that, that action wasn't free because someone else was forcing you to do something. You're literally moving your body in that case. But they would say it's the same as if the guy put a gun to your head and say, okay, you better stab that baby or I'm going to cut your throat. Or maybe maybe you have a baby and he's got your baby and says, kill that baby or I'm going to kill your baby. Right, and then that's coercion. So that's not a free choice. But both those cases, your actions are going to be determined by your heredity, your genetics, your personality, the kind of person you are, the circumstances. All those things are going to make you do one thing. And if someone knew all the circumstances and all the facts about you and all the facts about your genetics and your dispositions and all your experiences, they'd be able to predict what you would do with 100% if you're a determinist. And it's the same if you're a compatibilist. The only difference is the compatibilist says that the choices you make which are caused by you, we call those free. The determinist wants to say none of your choices are free. And that's because he thinks the compatibilist is confused about what free will is. So the determinist and the compatibilist both agree all actions are caused. The compatibilist, though, wants to say that some of those actions are free, namely the ones that you chose without coercion or threats. And what's the other word for coercion? Coercion. There's another fancy word for coercion.
Superimposing someone's will.
Oh, well. Coercion's good enough. Someone forcing you, or threatening you, or defrauding you, or doing something which causes you to do something that you don't want to do.
To call an action like truly free, don't you have to have an infinite number of choices as ways to act in that situation? If you're limited to say, give me your money or die, like you only have two options.
Uh-huh.
How is that free will? I mean, obviously you have a choice between the two, but you've been doled out the choices that you have in that situation. You didn't choose your choices.
Yeah. So the force of coercion is kind of an elusive concept, because there's some cases like the examples I gave, which are clearly examples of threats, whereas it's you put in this position where someone, in this case a person artificially puts you in a situation where they limit your choices. And that you might say it's the limitation of choices that makes you not free. But then suppose, you're in another circumstance, and there's nobody forcing you into it, but you're stuck in a situation where, what would be an example of, like you're out in the desert, and you've run out of water, you've got a gallon of water, and it's you and there's this other guy, and you're like gonna probably die of thirst. And so you have a choice there of like, okay, your only choice is to either give him half, give him some portion of the water, or kill him and drink it all yourself or something, right? And I suppose you have other choices like wandering out in the desert with half the water. But assume that you're stuck in the desert. You can't find civilization. You think maybe they're looking for you and they might find you. And then the question is, do you kill this guy and take all the water for yourself, or do you share the water? And that's kind of an artificial choice because you're in the circumstance. Most people would say that's not coercion, though. And so the compatibilists would say is that in that case where you're in a situation with limited options, that you're still free, even though your choice might be kill your friend and take the water for yourself, or share the water with your friend. So it's still a free choice. Whereas when someone's putting a gun to your head, that's a different situation. They would say that's someone creating a kind of artificial set of choices, one of which you really don't want to do. And it's the fact that this person has used their volition to put you in the situation, which means that it's coerced and hence not free. Not because this relies on this idea you're doing something you don't want to do. Now, there's this question about, well, aren't you doing something you don't want to do if you kill your friend and take the water for yourself? On the one hand, he's your friend, so you don't want to kill him. On the other hand, you don't want to die of dehydration, which is a horrendous way to die. And so the compatibilists will say only the coerced choice isn't free, not the choice with limited options. Yeah.
So I have a question. What about like a self-induced coercion? Like if you got yourself drunk.
Uh-huh.
Then the decisions you made would be limited by your intoxication. Is that considered coercion by the soft determinism, or is it considered like a free choice?
I could be a free choice. Like you choose to get drunk.
But well, I mean, post. Let's say you're already intoxicated.
Right. Well, you might choose. So I think the idea is you might choose to get drunk, and then there's a question about whether you're responsible for any action after
that.
Yeah,
accountability.
That, knowing that you might drinking to excess has certain liabilities that goes along with it.
So yeah, basically I'm trying to say, like, accountability wise, if you get yourself drunk and you do something, obviously the law finds you guilty no matter if you're drunk or sober.
Right.
But it seems like that's a form of coercion, like your options are limited once you're drunk. So I'm saying, what's the difference between that and say, somebody forcing you to drink or somebody coercing you to do something?
Well, I guess, and here you get this idea of maybe first and second order choices. So I can, if I choose to drink, by extension, I'm also choosing to take the likely consequences of that. So it's like, I can't say like, well, I had unprotected sex with that woman, but I didn't intend to produce a baby. But that's the risk if you do that.
Okay.
So I'd say that, that result, that was a voluntary choice, and so it would be free. There's something else about like drinking. I can't think of what it was. Well, if you think about it, may be that you make the choice initially, but that cuts off other choices later on. It's a limited options again. But since you started that ball rolling, it's still most people would say it's still your responsibility. Oh, I know what I was thinking of. I was thinking about that guy that just got sent up the river for getting drunk and firing into the federal courthouse. This guy's, I guess he got busted for, dealing meth, so he's got one strike against him. And one night he gets like really, really drunk, and then all of a sudden, in his inebriated state, driving by the federal courthouse and firing his pistol into it seems like a good idea. So had he not had a night of binge drinking, he probably wouldn't have done that. So then the question is, is that a free choice? When he's at the moment that he's driving by, does he have free will?
And I suppose you could go both ways. One way you could say, well, he has free will in this respect, and that he chose to get drunk, and by doing that, he knew that he might do something he would later regret. Or you might say, well, even though he made the choice to drink, he really didn't make the choice to shoot into the federal courthouse because it wasn't really a rational choice because he didn't appreciate the consequences of his actions, being how drunk he was. Yeah.
But being drunk only alters your judgment skills, not your free will to pursue them.
Well, do you have free will? Like, suppose like I'm having hallucinations that my girlfriend is a vampire and I drive a stake through her heart. You know, did I act of my own free will? I mean, that would be a free act. It's like, you know, she was a vampire, and she was going to bite me and turn me into the living dead, a fate worse than death. And so I told her to get away from me, but she kept on coming from me saying, what's wrong, what's wrong, why are you looking at me like that? And coming closer and closer, and I could see the fangs are like sticking out. And she was, and I knew the vampires are really, really fast, right? So I had to be, so I had to think fast, so I got the wooden mallet and the stake. I had them hidden behind my back and pulled them out. Whack, right? Well, that's like, you know, that's not free will because I have some mental illness, right? So that, so you might think about, you know, alcohol sort of being like that, but maybe not as extreme. So it, you know, it's, you know, an alcohol, you know, people have, there's degrees of impairment, right? So sometimes people can drink a lot, especially people that are habitual drinkers, and maybe they just have like some, they don't have the normal, what do we call it, inhibitions, right? People, and this guy Miguel, I used to be a security guard at a condo complex, and Miguel would, you know, hit the cerveza, and then he would want to get into the hot tub, and he hated wearing clothes when, you know, the hot tub was so warm, and it was such a nice summer night out, and so he'd get into the hot tub naked while there were other people, like, sitting in it, you know, and it's not a very big hot tub. And people would go, you know, so, but it seemed like a good idea at the time. And then he'd come back to his apartment. His wife would like lock him out, and he'd pound on the door and scream in Spanish for her to let him in. So, but you know, at the time when he started drinking, it's or after he's finished drinking, then he's like, oh yeah, you know, take it off my clothes and get in the hot tub seems like a good idea. But that's not a rational decision. Because he doesn't appreciate the consequences. And were he sober, you know, he wouldn't do that.
But lawfully, we still hold him accountable.
Right, yeah. Now, you might say, well, he's accountable because he's the one that chose to start drinking in the first place, and people are responsible for anything they do after they drink, assuming that people know that drinking lowers their inhibitions and leads people to do things that they later regret. You know, maybe if an alien from the planet Zontar who had a weakness for alcohol came here, you know, he drank alcohol and just thought it was really delicious and didn't understand the concept of intoxication, maybe, you know, he wouldn't be responsible. But yeah, I think it's assumed that, you know, a reasonable person understands that drinking to excess lowers inhibitions and might lead to regrettable decisions. And most people know it by responsibility or by personal experience. let's see. And maybe talk about weakness of will today, too. So, the libertarianism and determinism, they both agree on what free will is. Free will is having the power to do otherwise under exactly the same circumstances. It's just the libertarians say, yep, we have that power. We can do that. The determinists say, nope, we can't do that. And so even though they're opposite views, they agree that free will is the power to do otherwise under identical circumstances. And so both the libertarians and the determinists agree that that you can't be both determined and free. Why? Because there's this power. Well, one of us says you have it, the other one of us says you don't have it. So it's pretty cut and dried.
then these the compatibilists come along and muck up the works, and they say, well, wait a minute, both of you guys have a wrong view of what free will is. And it seems like freedom and determinism are at odds with each other, but if you really think about it, what does it mean to be free? To be free, it just means you can do what you want, and you want to do something, and you do it. Now, you determinists, I like you, because you believe in science. You believe that every event has a cause. You recognize that we're made up of particles of matter, and that matter is determined, and therefore all of our actions are determined. You recognize the science of psychology and sociology, which predicts human behavior. You guys are right about that. And to think that human beings stand outside of nature, that we have this sort of metaphysical power to make free choices in the vacuum of all our heredity and all our experience and our nature as biological beings, that's a bunch of nonsense. So you determinists are right. Every human action is determined. On the other hand, I like you libertarians, because you believe in that there's such a thing called freedom, and that's like something everyone understands. Everyone not only recognizes freedom, but values freedom to some extent. And furthermore, the compatibilists will say, if you think about the concept of morality, where would morality be without free will? Nobody would be responsible for their actions. And they think the determinists, who have this idea that we need to get beyond concept of freedom and dignity, blame and responsibility, and just, you know, treat people like they're dogs and try to train them the right way, that's a bad way of going about things. And that to make sense of human experience, you have to recognize that people are responsible for their actions. That sometimes it's appropriate to blame people, sometimes it's inappropriate to blame people. That people have moral responsibility for their actions. So they like that part about the libertarians. So then, you know, the compatibilists will say, okay, well, I like this bit of the sort of determinist, the scientific view that every event has a cause and all human actions as part of the universe also have causes. But I also like this concept of morality, that there are certain things that are right, certain things that are wrong. People are responsible for their actions. They can't say society made me do it, or, you know, it was my poor upbringing explains why I'm a career criminal, you know, loser, right? So you can't have that. And so they try to steer this middle course, and they say this whole conflict between libertarians and determinists is just that they're wrong about free will. Free will isn't the power to do otherwise under identical circumstances. They agree with the determinists that nobody has that power. But they say that's not what free will is. Free will is doing what you want or doing what you decide to do without someone else forcing you or threatening you or using coercion on you. So those actions, those determined actions where no one's forcing you to do something, those are free. And then ones where you're coerced, those are actions that aren't free. So now we have free actions. We can blame people for what they do. We can have a concept of morality. And so, like, when you read about that, you know, child molester that, you know, molested, 257 kids, and those are the ones he just admitted to, right? And did this, had this horrendous, trail of human suffering he's left behind. You don't have to say, well, there's something, you know, abnormal about his brain, or perhaps, Freudian comes along and says, well, tell me how he was toilet trained, and I'll tell you how he went wrong. No, you just say, look, this guy is, you know, he's bad, he's evil. Even if he has a compulsion, you know, he should be expected to control it. He's responsible for his actions. Even though maybe there is something funny about his brain. Maybe, he has these compulsions other people don't. And given his circumstances, his biology, his heredity, there's nothing else he could have done. But he chose to do it, right? And so, therefore, he's responsible for his actions. And so, that moral intuition that, you know, people who do bad things deserve blame and punishment, the compatibilists want to preserve, while at the same time holding on to the scientific idea that every event has a cause, including human behavior. Yes, sir.
Are we going to need to know about Reformed theology on the test?
Mm-hmm. So we'll and actually let's talk about that with regard to compatibilism. This probably isn't the best example. I like it as an example just because I like theology. And I think it's a really good example of a case where, which is hard for the compatibilist. Because if compatibilism is true, then Reformed theology or Calvinism should seem to be okay. And people would say, well, that's kind of an interesting view. But people have this strong reaction to it. And the problem with Reformed theology is this. It says all people are born with original sin. They inherited it from Adam. And that's something that's actually, you know, fairly universal in Christian theology, Catholic, Protestant, Orthodox. This idea of original sin inherited from Adam. Adam disobeyed, and then in, you know, Lamarckian fashion, all of Adam's descendants have this predisposition to sin. So now here I am. And I'm sinning it up. I'm, you know, drinking, carousing, swearing, using God's name in vain.
Eating an apple a day.
Why is that sinful? Because actually, the story in Genesis, it wasn't actually an apple. It's just called the forbidden fruit. Although sometimes portrayed in, I think, later medieval art as an apple. Actually, early on, it's like a pear or a pomegranate. Something really tasty. Anyway, so I just had these pomegranate seeds when I was on vacation. They were delicious. Now I see why, like, the early guys, they made it a pomegranate. But the so it's something, you know, it's like, you know, it's like candy in the ancient world. You gotta get one that's really ripe, though. But in early medieval art, they painted the forbidden fruit as a pomegranate or a pear. Anyway, so although the phrase "the apple of my eye" is out of the Book of Proverbs. Anyway, so I'm sending it up, and I'm being profane and blasphemous, and I'm listening to death metal, and I'm shooting heroin, and converting around with prostitutes, going to parties at Charlie Sheen's house. You know, I'm doing all these terrible things, right? And maybe, you know, I'm stealing little old ladies' purses for pet money to feed my drug habit. I'm just a mess. And so then suppose, you know, I die of a drug overdose. And then, I wake up in the presence of a God, and God says, okay, you commit all these sins, and he, like, names them, and he's like, well, Lord, how many times did I take your name in vain? 1,000,006, huh? Wow. God. Right, so that's an old Steve Martin joke. So, so then God says, I'm going to punish you. I'm going to punish you for all your sins. Now, it seems like if I had a good defense attorney, maybe a guy with, like, horns and pitchfork, he might say, you know, God, my client here, even though he consciously chose all those bad decisions he made, or decisions you call bad, he didn't have free will. He didn't act of his own. He acted of his own volition. But where do those volitions come from? There's this guy, Adam, right? And he had one choice to make that he screwed up. And because of that, all the rest of humanity are paying for it. Did my client vote for Adam? I don't think so. Right? My client was born in sin. He was born with this predisposition to do bad things. Therefore, how can you blame him for sinning, since that's his nature? It even says in the Book of Romans that he has a sin nature. Well, how do you can blame my client for sinning any more than you can blame him for not being able to jump to the moon? It would be as if you said, okay, you want to get to heaven? All you have to do is clear this high jump. How high is the high jump? Oh, it's 10,000 feet, right? Anybody who can make the high jump gets into heaven. Who's going to make that, right? Well, he's just as his physical body is limited, so his psychological nature is limited in that he has this predisposition to sin. And according to the Calvinist, God could say, I don't buy your argument, Satan. Even though he was determined to do what he did, even though he couldn't have done otherwise because of the sin nature, because he chose it and he enjoyed it, even though those choices were determined by the kind of being that he was, he deserves to go to hell. And most people would say that would be like taking a person, you know, in a wheelchair and, you know, sending to hell because they couldn't, you know, run a 50-yard dash, right? So the guy in the wheelchair gets to heaven. God says, okay, you can get through the pearly gates if you can make it there in 10 seconds flat, right? And he's still in the wheelchair. Well, come on, you know, he can't do that. Well, you can't not sin according to this doctrine of original sin. So in the same way, the determinacies, all our actions are caused by things that are not under control. You don't decide what your genes are, who your parents are, what circumstances you grew up under, what circumstances even face you from day to day can change without your you having anything to do with it. And so most people see this idea that God sends people to hell for things they couldn't help as being a kind of monstrous idea. And it's, you know, it sours people on religion if they think that the Calvinist way is a proper interpretation of the Bible. So in that way, that God would be just in sending people to hell for things they couldn't help if compatibilism was true. Why? Because as long as they chose it, even if that choice is determined, it doesn't matter. They're still responsible. Most people would say, if that's the way it is, you're not responsible. You're chomping at the bit, I can tell.
No, I was just wondering, let's say we had a Pauline-type prosecutor and how he would respond to that.
Uh-huh.
I think he would say something along the lines of, towards Calvinism, he would say something like, we can say we inherited Adam's nature, but it's not his sin which condemns us, but our own. Mm-hmm. So, in a sense that even if you were the one in the garden, you would probably make the same decision.
Well, then why would that be? Seems like God made a mistake in making me, or he's put me in circumstances which caused me to do certain things.
No, that's just the inevitable consequence of free will.
But you know, in this case, there's not. Adam doesn't have real free will. He has a kind of faking compatibilist free will in that he desires the fruit and he eats from it and he enjoys it. But he couldn't have done otherwise. And if God set up the garden that way, God knows that Adam couldn't have done otherwise. So either you have to say it's part of God's plan, which seems, you know, kind of perverse, like the doctrine of the happy fall.
Well, but then you're also eliminating in the equation, for Protestant theology, the figure of Christ. I mean, you're subtracting him. I mean, for theology, choosing or rejecting Christ is the pinpoint of eternal life, not whether or not you've sinned.
Right. So, I mean, accepting Jesus is sort of your get-out-of-hell-free card.
Yeah.
So even though...
And you have a free choice to do that. I mean, you may or may not have a choice to sin. Let's say that's in your nature.
Uh-huh.
That's your natural inclination. But when it comes to, when it comes to choosing or rejecting the figure of Christ as a sacrifice, you have complete control of that.
Now, the Calvinist will say no. He'll say that no one comes to the Father except the Spirit draws him. And that what happens is that those people God chooses to get to heaven, he supernaturally does a little miracle in them that causes them to not want to sin, to want to, like, stop shooting heroin, and to start going to church and praying and helping people and all that.
That seems to contradict John 3:16 of loving the entire world. I mean, to say that he personally chose individuals contradicts the doctrine of universal sacrifice, which is a clear message in Pauline and early Christian scripture.
Yeah, so there are these things that about predestination that pervade, you know, Paul's letters too, like, and so that can make things a little more complex. But let me get somebody else in here.
It seems like the idea of an omniscient creator and the idea of this original sin, and that if God had created a reality where it could see to the end of time and knew everything that was going to happen, it seems like these theories or philosophies of, like, condemning an individual because of their actions, either to hell or allowing them into heaven. It just seems like kind of this ridiculous notion that all this was predestined, and like, what's the point of, I guess, religion in general if God knows already who is going to like follow God and who's going to disobey it?
It does seem kind of meaningless. I think that the Calvinists would say, well, those who are you know, chosen will, you know, act in certain ways because of God is, you know, redeeming them, and God sort of counteracts their sin nature and sends His Holy Spirit to help them, you know, do things that are different than they're inclined to do. But coming back to this idea of the fall, like, if you're a determinist, you'll say, look, if God set up the garden that way, then it seems like God screwed up if things happen the way He didn't want them to happen.
Whoa. Descartes talks about this in his Meditations. He says, you know, if you're like the manager of, let's say, a factory, right? Mm-hmm. You have all these workers under you. You're the manager, but in no way are you responsible for their actions. I mean, you're the governor figure, but you don't determine what they choose. They choose what they choose. So you can't hold God accountable for the fact that free will enables them to choose or reject.
Well, maybe, again, if you're a libertarian, which Descartes was, if you're a determinist, though, and remember, compatibilists are determinists. Yeah. The compatibilists, well, and, you know, it seems like you can't say that, and you have to say, well, look, you know, if God didn't want Adam to sin, then either He should have made Adam differently, or He should have set up the garden differently.
Right, no, that makes perfect sense. But the problem for the determinist is, if you take away, let's say you take away the ability to choose right or wrong, you take away the tree from the garden, then would they really have the ability to love, I guess, would be the essential. To be able to love, you have to be able to not love. You have to be able to choose love. Love isn't love by definition.
Right.
So in order for love to exist, and establishing that love isn't forced, love would be a choice.
Mm-hmm.
So for love to exist, it implies that you have to have some sort of choice that man has to make.
Well, God should just set up the circumstances so that Adam will choose to do certain things. Like, God should have set it up so that Adam, or you know, refused to take the forbidden fruit.
But it's
or
not,
that Eve, you know, was figure out the serpent was trying to trick her.
But it's not even like He said, like, He put the fruit in there and He stepped back and He's like, all right, here he goes. No, He's like, I put that there, don't eat it. Like, it's not like He just put it there and He's like, all right, let's see what happens. Oh, gotcha, now you're going to die. No, okay. He, like, gives him explicit saying, hey, if you eat that, bad stuff's going to happen.
Maybe He just would have ignored it. You know, they wouldn't have eaten it, they wouldn't have noticed it. But it's like, you know, sort of the, your parent says, don't do that, right? You're like, oh, I really want to do that. And why is that? It's because, you know, that sin nature inherited from Adam, this tendency towards disobedience. At least that's the line from the, both Old and New Testaments. Yeah, Jesse?
It seems like, according to the Christian theology, God either lost control of its creation, doesn't know the future of its creation, or we're just like a movie that God's watching, like that God directed and wrote and cast and mm-hmm. filmed, and it's like this movie like that watches over and over again because He's bored and doesn't want to go play basketball or something.
Yeah, I mean, that's like one of the criticisms of the kind of the theological determinist view. So if you think about like the idea of things having meaning, I suppose in that way it seems like kind of pointless. Whereas the free will idea does seem to get explain like say things like human suffering. I mean, one of the problems, we'll get to this later on, with belief in a just and loving God is this idea of human suffering. Now, if you believe in free will, you can explain a lot of that away. You could say, well, God could have created a perfect world of unicorns and rainbows, but then, you know, human beings, in order to be free, have to have the capacity to do evil as well as good. And God couldn't logically created beings who are free who could only do good. Now, The compatibilist would say that he could have, right? If remember, God is in control of the universe. He can set up the cause any way he wants. Human actions are determined. So God, in the compatibilist definition of freedom, God could have set up the world so human beings would only freely do good. They would want to do good all the time. And God could have programmed human beings to want to do good, to give us desires to do the things that God wants us to do. So that's a big problem for the compatibilists, I think, in explaining why there's evil. Whereas the libertarian can say, well, that's logically contradictory to say you're free, but you can only do good. Because free by its definition means the power to do otherwise. You did this, but you could have done that. And if you did the thing you shouldn't have done, then you deserve blame for it. If you did the thing that you should have done, then you get praise for it. And that makes intuitive sense. But the compatibilist concept, it seems to be fraught with difficulties. I think it's about break time. Let's take 10 minutes.
Okay, so
Okay, and questions about soft determinism or reform theology or Manchurian candidate? Well, think about if compatibilism was true, then the Manchurian candidate who's brainwashed to commit an act of assassination would be guilty. But normally you think if somebody's brainwashed, they're not guilty. But if you brainwash a person such that you create in them artificially a desire to do a certain thing, then they're acting on their desire, right? That's the last thing in the causal chain. And really, according to compatibilism, you're just doing in a short period of time what environment, genetics, and heredity do naturally over a long period of time. So, is it artificial? Is that why it seems kind of funny that you don't think that person's free? But I suppose it's artificial in the same sense of someone coercing you, but it's not really coercion, right? It might be coercion to take someone and strap them to a table, but it's not coercion to hold a watch in front of their face or whatever. So the idea is that if you brainwash someone, even if you coerce them initially, those attitudes are going to be inculcated in that person and stick with them long after the coercion's over. So think about and suppose it's not even coercion. Suppose I'll give you the following scenario. So there's a mother who wants her daughter to not make the same mistake that she did and marry some poor philosophy professor who can barely eke out a living, and she had to get a part-time job cleaning houses, and it really sucks to be lower middle class, and so she wants better things for her daughter. So, from the time she's so high, she's like, tall colony or princess, and she's, getting her tiaras and fake jewelry and telling her things like, honey, it's as easy to love a rich man as it is to love a poor one. Just look at your father, right? And so over and over again, drills into this kid's head that, that being poor sucks, and what you want to do is marry into wealth, and that's the most important thing to look for in a man. And it may be, if other circumstances are a certain way, that sure enough she holds out for she's like a gold digger and she holds out for the rich guy, right? Now imagine a second scenario. She doesn't have this mother, but her mother instead realizes the error of her ways, and she sees her daughter begins dating a grad student in art history. And she's like, oh no, she's going to make the same mistake that I made. So her daughter is in therapy for some other kind of reason. And so she bribes the therapist to suggest hypnotherapy for this other problem, whatever it is. And during hypnotherapy, the hypnotist plants the suggestion, you really desire to marry a rich man, right? And with the same result. Now, are either of those cases free? What do you think? If you're a libertarian, which of those cases would be free? Well, I think you'd say like the woman who marries the becomes the gold digger under the influence of her mother. The libertarian would say, even though her upbringing may have predisposed her to marry a rich man, she really had a choice. She could have done otherwise. She could have gone against her mother. She could have freely chosen to value something other than money, despite her conditioning. Conditioning can only predispose you. It can never determine you. Now, the compatibilists and the determinists are going to say that no conditioning, heredity, environment, those are the sole factors in determining what you do. And so when it comes time for her to marry, she couldn't have done otherwise. The difference, though, is that the determinists will say, well, in both those cases, she's, you know, determined because every action is determined. But the compatibilists will want to say, well, in the case where it's the mother who's always going off on, you know, marrying some poor schlub like your father, that in that case, she's free because she freely chooses who she marries. No one blackmails her and forces her to marry the rich guy. The rich guy doesn't threaten to burn her house down or, you know, kill her mother if she doesn't marry her. So it's a free choice because she chooses to do it, even though that choice is determined. But then the compatibilists is going to want to say the hypnotherapy thing. There's something funny about that because that seems pretty obviously not free to everyone. But it seems according to compatibilism, they're both equally, or they're both. It seems like according to compatibilism, that would have to be free too, and it's not. So it seems like if you're going to say that a hypnotic suggestion implanted in your subconscious in a short period of time means you don't have free will, you'll have to say that when an attitude is drilled into you over a long period of time, you're not free in those cases either. Why? Because you didn't have the power to do otherwise. And this makes it look like compatibilism gives you the sort of faux form of freedom where you think, well, I chose it. But if you chose it because you were determined to choose it, you know, you didn't freely choose it. And compatibilists, some people argue, play on this ambiguity in the word choice. On the one hand, choice seems to imply a free choice. But in the compatibilist sense, it's a choice, it's a determined choice. But it's a choice because it's a conscious decision, which is determined. And so that's why it seems like compatibilism wants to have their cake and eat it too, but it doesn't really work. See, Jesse and then Isaac.
Perhaps we need to differentiate things that maybe free will is circumstantial and make like categories of free will and say that free will exists for humans absolutely in a vacuum with no prior influence or outside influence, but then we get into these artificial worlds where we become, or some people have become very versed in making people act in a way where they think they're exerting their free will, but in essence you're exerting their will.
Yeah, so maybe it's like, you know, what's the difference between coercion and manipulation? Because you might say, well, she was cleverly manipulated by her mother, but her mother didn't, you know, determine her choice. But then, so there's a fine line between coercion and manipulation and brainwashing and persuasion, right? You know what's the difference between persuasion and manipulation and brainwashing? And some people would say, well, it's, you know, how effective you are, I suppose. So I mean that might be a problem in trying to find some notion of coercion, which it shows that an action isn't free, but is distinct from other examples of sort of milder forms of persuasion that we normally think, you know, don't impinge on freedom. And maybe you shouldn't have like an all or nothing idea of freedom. You might, like a libertarian, for example, might say, well, maybe there are degrees of freedom. You might have, like if you have like a normal mother who doesn't, you know, try to drill some attitude into you, maybe you have more freedom with regard to the choice of mate you have. Or maybe, and this sort of hits on the Freudian argument, maybe if you had like a traumatic childhood, maybe you don't have as great a degree of freedom as someone with a more psychologically healthy childhood, in that it's a lot harder for you to have meaningful relationships and to control your moods, and you sort of go down the line that maybe you have a kind of a handicap, like a physical handicap. But that doesn't mean that you don't have any choices. It just means that certain choices and certain things are more difficult for you to do. In the same way, like somebody in a wheelchair, you know, they have limited choices, but you know, they can still go around. It's just it takes them longer, and it's more of a hassle to sort of get along in the world. And you might think about a person being psychologically handicapped by being raised in a bad environment and having a personality that has traits that don't fit well with the rest of society. Isaac.
Disregarding self-determinism, how does determinism respond to the argument for moral responsibility from libertarianism?
Oh, good question. Yeah, so the argument for moral responsibility, which will be on the exam, says that, will someone want to paraphrase that for me? Save my voice here. So what's the argument for somebody, maybe somebody who hasn't spoken recently, so what's the argument from moral responsibility for the libertarian position? What do they say? How is moral responsibility and free will, how are they supposed to be related? Any thoughts? What does it mean to be free? So if you don't have free will, are you responsible for your actions? Okay, I'm driving
are
down.
Are you for determinism or for libertarianism?
There's an argument. What is the question? Is what is the argument from moral responsibility for libertarianism? So it's an argument for the normal free will idea, libertarianism, and it's based on the idea that there's such a thing as morality, and that morality seems related to free will in a certain way. I just got his hand up. I know. Well, let me ask this question. Are people responsible for their actions if they don't have free will?
No.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like that.
It depends on the action.
Well, suppose, an example I use in the text, you have like a guy driving down the street, and all of a sudden he has a seizure, and his limbs twitch uncontrollably, and his car goes into a crowd of school children waiting for the bus, right?
Well, it would be his fault if he knew he had the condition, but it wouldn't if he didn't.
Yeah, so suppose he had no idea he had this condition. As a matter of fact, maybe he religiously goes to have a physical exam every year. There's no history of this thing in his family, just sort of a freak thing that popped up, right? Would you if you were his neighbor, how would you feel about him? Would you be angry, vengeful, and outraged, or would you be sympathetic?
Sympathetic.
Yeah. Now, why would you be sympathetic towards him?
Because it wasn't really his fault. It was his problem.
Now, how do you think he would feel about it? Would he feel bad about it, or?
He probably would feel bad. If he wasn't a
psycho,
mass murderer, psycho, yeah. He'd probably feel bad about it.
Yeah. So the idea that he's, you feel sorry for him because he's done this thing that he had no control over. He didn't really want to do it. He didn't choose to do it, but it sort of somehow happened to him out of his control. And you might think he feels irrationally. He feels guilty about it because he's somehow involved. But you think that he's really not, and maybe you try to convince him, hey, there wasn't anything you could have done, you just went to a physical, there's no history in the family, there's no way you could have known. But all these things have to do with him having control over the situation. If he had no control, he has no responsibility. And so morality rests on this concept that you had control over what you did. You did X when you could have done Y or Z, and we're going to punish you because you did X. And the X was really, really bad. If you couldn't have done anything other than X, how can we punish you for that? And X could be anything from, stealing off supplies to stealing a $2,500 necklace or shooting to the courthouse or what have you.
So in comparison to, like, the reckless driver, yeah. they would be held responsible because they had the choice to choose to drive into that crowded or to drive yeah. recklessly versus to not drive recklessly.
Yeah, you got people that are like, I have a need for speed. You know, people love to drive really, really fast and recklessly and weave out of in and out of traffic. Now, according to determinism, that person's behavior is no more free than the person who had the seizure. Why? Because they're just acting according to the causes. Why do they drive so fast? Because their father is a biker and who has a disregard for traffic rules. And society in general, because he has also got an overbearing mother who always made him go to church, right? And this creates a neurotic conflict in his mind, and so he's rebelling against his mother, identifying with his father, and it leads him to flout all manner of rules, but especially traffic rules, because dad's always talking about, you know, the great days when he was a biker and when he stuck his thumb in the eye of the man and how cool it was. And so he wants to emulate his father and rebel against his mother. So, you know, psychologically, you can see how people, or maybe he just, you know, his father taught him, his father modeled bad driving, right, when he was learning to drive. So there's all sorts of psychological things. Maybe he's got some, problem with his serotonin reuptake in his brain, where he has this need for constant stimulation. And so how does he get the stimulation? He gets that adrenaline rush when he drives really, really fast. And there's people like this that are kind of adrenaline junkies, and it might be that there's something different in their brains. So yeah, all this stuff, so you think, now, okay, so the reckless driver, though, the libertarian will say, he still had a choice, and his action wasn't determined. He could have done something different. Therefore, we're right to blame him. The determinists can't blame him. The determinists can't blame anybody because nobody's responsible for their actions. They're all a result of society, heredity,
unless they use the argument that their parents determined their actions, then they could blame the parents for that person's actions.
Blame their parents.
If you're a determinist, you could. If you're a libertarian, that seems kind of like a weak argument.
Yeah, right? I think it is a weak argument either way.
Logically, it seems like the determinist falls flat on his face when it comes to this. Because let's say you had the example of the person who, like, his entire childhood built up to this, and even the chemicals in his brain and whatnot, that all builds up to it. Well, you're just supplying a lot of justification for the determinist. But let's take an example where this is the first time he's ever driven recklessly. He's in the car with somebody he just met, and they said that he should race this other car next to him. And so on impulse, he drives really recklessly and hits some children. I mean, you can't... I mean, even though you would say the justification isn't as great as the person who was raised in his household and been experiencing it, but from a determinist point of view, they're equal. I mean, both their actions are the result of something before them, they want to say. But in reality, they're equal. So I think when you want to try presenting justification like they were raised this way, you're really taking like libertarian beliefs of justification and responsibility in order to justify determinism.
Yeah, it seems like what the determinist is trying to do is say, well, he couldn't have helped it, therefore don't blame him.
Yeah.
When it should be, nobody can be blamed for anything. It makes no sense.
Yeah, that's more of an honest answer of what determinism really stands for. There's no color, there's no like... There shouldn't be a facade there of he couldn't help it. No, it's nobody's responsible.
A determinist might say, look, you're caught in this sort of narrow mindset of blame and praise, reward and punish, and an eye for an eye, you know, and this sort of antiquated system of morality. When really, you look at human behavior is the proper venue of psychology. And psychology study why people do the things they do. And we psychologists, we know that human beings do certain things. They give certain behavior in response to the environment and their past conditioning. And we can study this. And so what we want to do is understand why people do the things they do, and then try to make people act better. And so it's not, we need to get beyond freedom and dignity, to coin a phrase from B.F. Skinner. That's the name of his book, Beyond Freedom and Dignity. He's the father of behaviorism. And so You need to get beyond that and beyond freedom and dignity and think in terms of behavior. And there's two kinds of behavior. There's functional behavior, which is, being respecting the rights of others and being a good citizen and not taking other people's stuff and not killing people and not getting in bar fights and not, shooting into the federal courthouse. And then there's of dysfunctional behavior, which is doing all of those things, right? Doing things which are harmful to society. So what we want to do is try to figure out what it is that makes people behave in functional ways that make society run well and make people happy and healthy. And then we want to inculcate those attitudes in our educational institutions, in our media, and so on, and try to produce the environment which will produce the most functional behavior.
And then while you're saying that, I get up and stab you and just say it was determined. Like, you induced anger within me because I disagreed with you, and I stabbed you as a result, so you can't really blame me. It was your action that initiated my response.
Oh, another social deviant
as you're
produced by society, alas, right? As I bleed out on the carpet.
Yeah, no, you'd want somebody to, like, arrest me and punish me.
I might say, I have an irrational urge to stab you back if I had a knife, or, something like that, right? Or I think, how dare you? Or suppose it was, you stab me in the back, and I turn around and say, Judas, and I'd be really upset that you stabbed me in the back, and I'd say, I have an irrational resentment towards you, but I realize that that's just, that's just my conditioning, right? That as a biological being, I react with hostility and fear to a pain stimulus, but that's just what human beings are, right? It's just like the dog, right? Or your cat, or whatever your pet, like, my cat, he likes crawling up on me when I'm laying in bed, and I'm nice and warm, and I pet him on the head. He likes treading on the blanket like he used to do when he was a little kitty and wanted to get milk from his mommy, right? And so he's, doing his cat thing. Now, I pet the cat, and I talk to him, and he likes that, and just hangs out, right? Now, if the cat, the first few times the cat came over, kind of gingerly walking on me, if I, pick up the cat and threw him against the wall, then pretty soon he's not going to walk on me, right? Well, that's what you want to do with, like, criminals and deviants. You get them when they're young. You catch them, shoplifting, stealing, bullying their playmates or whatever like that. You just give them some negative reinforcement. And then you give them some positive reinforcement when they're you catch them at doing the right thing. This is the way you potty train a dog, right? And then you sort of treat human beings like that, and pretty soon they're acting righteous and not causing trouble, and everybody's happy. And then you take the few deviants, the people that really something went wrong early on, that fell through the cracks, and you just you try to fix them, but you don't tell them they're bad. You don't preach at them. You just, put them in a rehabilitation facility.
You ever seen A Clock for Orange?
I have, yeah.
Doesn't that kind of demonstrate what happens when you take that kind of mindset?
Well, the lesson there is that when you take a super predator into predatory society and take the predator out of him, then he's victim to all the other lesser predators out there. I think it was what Burgess was trying to say, but. Now, I think with the Clockwork Orange, like, the thing about him, and for those of you who haven't seen, I don't give any spoilers, but the basic plot is they take this guy who's essentially like a psychopathic burglar, rapist, violent, awful, awful person, and they condition him so he can't be violent anymore, and the thought of violence makes him violently ill. So, and then, they let him loose and say, go forth and prosper, young man. And then, he's in this crime-ridden neighborhood that he grew up in, and he's not very well suited to it. But if you do that with everyone, then everyone has the right attitudes. No one wants to, commit acts of violence, and wouldn't that be, a utopian society? Where everybody get along and said, peace, neighbor, and
I think it would be better if it came internal motivation than external motivation. I think external motivation proves to be faulty in many aspects, but if you're intrinsically motivated to do that, then it lasts a lot longer.
I think what Skinner would say is that all intrinsic motivation comes from external stimuli. Or maybe, and Skinner says it's almost all external stimuli. Freud would say early on it's all external stimuli, but then by the time you're five, it's mostly internal stimuli. So like behaviorism, the B.F. Skinner's view, it's that, you know, why do some people think that, why do some people, like you look at kids, why when someone's being bullied, do some kids join in on the taunting and the teasing and the bullying, while another kid might step in and say, leave that kid alone? Well, it's because of the way they're conditioned. You know, they have certain role models as parents, the media impressions, maybe like, you know, church, you know, can have an impact. The social dynamics of their family. And it may be like the bully, the people who are doing the bullying, maybe they're like youngest children who are bullied by their older brothers. So you can find like the causes of why people, you know, do these things. And the idea, again, that the behaviors has is that over time, you know, experiences, they get internalized. Like your parents tell you no over and over and over again, or you're like, you know, maybe you're like a little kid and you're in the grocery store and you see something colorful like some candy and you reach out for it because you want the candy, and then, you know, whack, there goes the hand on it saying, no, no, you know. And so that like lodges in your mind, and you do it over again, you get this no. And pretty soon, nobody has to be standing there telling you no, slapping your hand down. You reach out for the candy, maybe you're thinking about shoplifting, and all of a sudden this little voice in your head says, no. Like, and your hand just stops there. You think, oh, I should have, stealing. And it comes out in this idea, don't do that, stealing is wrong. Right? And it's from all these experiences of being punished and blamed and you know, seeing people act in certain ways over your lifetime. It becomes this inner voice that whispers in your ear and makes you do things. Yeah.
How do you explain that then if, for example, someone is like rebellious, like someone who's brought up well and taught all the right things, don't do this, don't do that, do good things, don't do bad things, they hit 18, get out of the house, and then start robbing banks?
Yeah, I think there you have like the behaviors might say a couple of things, or and actually you can look at both the behaviors or the psychoanalyst, and they might say different things. The behavior says you really can't like look and peer inside someone's mind and tell what's going on there. You can just see what they do, and so they sort of want to look at, you know, the behavior, stimulus and response, whereas the psychoanalysts, the Freudians, they want to say, well, there's something going on there that probably happened really early on in life where the kid was just like, he was pushed around by his father, you know, for a long period of time, and, you know, told no and given a bunch of limits. And so, and then at home, he's sort of kept on a tight leash, and because he's sort of, you know, because he's oppressed in this way by the tyrannical father, he has this urge to kill his father and marry his mother. No, sorry, that's classic Freud. But, you know, Freud has this thing where it's the, you know, the Oedipus complex and the I forget what the thing where you want to kill your father's. There's a name for that too. But that maybe the whole thing is the Oedipus complex. But anyway, Freud has this idea that when you're growing up, depending on how tyrannical your father is, it's like you resent his authority. So some people resent it more than others because some people's fathers are more tyrannical than others. So that explains the rebellion and why some people's adolescent rebellion is like staying out too late and maybe, you know, getting a B on a report card. Because they wanted to go out with their friends. Other people, it's shooting up coke and robbing the 7-Eleven store or what have you. And so I think the determinist might say it's just a matter of like there's something different with that person that's different than somebody else, and why they, you know, acted in antisocial ways. And I think that they would also say that maybe from the outside it looks like this person had a good upbringing, but if you look at like the details, there's probably something going on there you don't know about. You know, maybe the person was, you know, molested by an uncle, maybe they were like, you know, their parents seemed nice and normal, but behind closed doors they were kind of wacky. Maybe something traumatic happened at school. So there's all sorts of things that might predispose a person to act differently. What do you think about that? Does that make sense or seem tenuous?
I don't know. I don't like any of the views.
So
it can all be argued.
Well, I think like the important thing is to like to see each side and see what the good points and bad points are for determinism and libertarianism.
I feel like compatibilism is like, or however you say it, it's kind of like the mix of the two. Kind of like the middle ground, which makes the most sense to me. Because like some things can be determined by prior events, but some things are just completely random. Or they have a choice to make. Or you can make different choices opposite from that of the deterministic view.
Yeah. Well, that's a libertarian view then. So the compatibilist is a determinist. The compatibilist says, yes, all actions are determined, but the ones you weren't forced to do, those are the free ones. So they say all events are caused, all human behavior is caused, and you couldn't have done anything other than what you did do. So if you came to class and you're sitting there, then that's the only thing you could have done. You might think that you could have like stayed home and slept in or gone out and, you know, done something else, right? But that's the only thing you could have done. That's what the determinist says, and that's what the compatibilist says. Now, the compatibilist will say, you freely came to class today. Why? Because no one forced you to do it, right? Now, you had certain motivations based on, you know, wanting to get a good grade on the test and, you know, whatever else, you know, might be involved. But since you chose those things and you're acting on your desire, your own reasons, that's a free choice. If someone forced you to come to class, then they said, if you don't come to class, then I'll, you know, fill in the blank of something you don't want to happen. Then which would be kind of a weird thing to do. But imagine someone, you know, had some reason for you being here. If they forced you to come to class, then that would be an unfree action. But both those actions would be caused. Regardless of your motivation, all of your actions are caused, according to compatibilism. Libertarians say you always have the power to do otherwise if you're making sort of an every decision. Unless, you know, something's happening to you. Like, you know, I don't have the power not to have reflexes. If someone takes, like, a blunt object and pushes it towards my eye really fast, my eye is going to blink. And I don't have control over that. I don't have control over whether my heart beats, you know, direct control. But I do have control over whether I, you know, wave my coffee mug back and forth or whether I wave it up and down. So ordinary actions, the libertarians will say, are free. And so to be a libertarian, you don't have to believe that every action is free, only that some actions are free. So there's a lot of things I don't have the freedom to do. I don't have the freedom to
jump them in. Divide by zero.
What?
You don't have the freedom to divide by zero.
Chuck Norris can.
Divide by zero, yeah. I had a student that said, I can do everything I want. I said, no, you can't. He's like, oh, yeah, and then, can you divide by zero? And he's like, what? I can't if I want. It's not possible. I'll do it anyway. See, he had some issues with his father, I bet. You know, like, I bet if I looked at him, he had some issues with authority. Yeah.
So I got a question for, like, in reference to the behaviorist argument and psychoanalytic argument. For children, it seems like most of the behaviorist and the Freudian arguments come from, like, post-childhood, like, everything that it was accumulated. So my question is, like, when you're younger, still a child, and you tell a lie,
right,
before you're caught or taught that it's wrong, it seems intrinsically you know that it's wrong. Because when somebody does catch you, there's an immediate sense of guilt or regret, even though you haven't been conditioned to have guilt or regret. So my question is, how can you intrinsically have a response to being caught in an action of lying or something like that and feel the regret if you haven't been conditioned to feel that yet?
Well, that's a good question. I think the Freudian would say...
I'm talking hypothetically. They have never had any experience. Nobody has ever taught them the right or wrong of lying. then they probably wouldn't have a reaction to being caught until they were punished, or had somebody been angry towards them for lying, they wouldn't have a reaction towards it.
Or maybe they observed other people lying or telling. I mean, if you're assuming they've never seen anybody else tell a lie and seen any reaction to them, that seems kind of unlikely because people lie all the time.
Right. Well, I'm just.
Or they complain about liars.
Like, it seems like the first response when you catch a child lying or something to that degree, you catch them, they're not like, well, why is lying wrong? I don't understand. Their first response is, yeah, I knew that was wrong. Or they realize that they need to accept punishment for that. But it's never like this, I don't understand why lying is wrong. It's like they understand, they just haven't been caught yet.
Maybe like...
It's because they socialize lying with bad things, because if you lie, you get in trouble. No, but they have never experienced getting in trouble or seen somebody get in trouble.
Let me get somebody else. You have your hand up?
Yeah. I just feel like libertarianism point of view can never really be proven, but the determinism could eventually, if we understood all the workings in the brain. So.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't go like back in time and be like, okay, which one is he going to choose this time? You know.
Yeah. So you think like the determinism has something going for it, just because you can study human behavior and if you make some good predictions, that might show that it's a good position.
But yeah. There'd be so much calculation and it'd be almost impossible, because what's determining you to choose things could come from whether it was a sunny day on the first day of second grade. I mean, and then anything that's ever happened to you, from you waking up.
Well, I'm just saying,
the whole butterfly effect.
Yeah.
Some point in the future, that could be possible. Now.
Yeah.
I mean, we have like supercomputers doing crazy amounts of calculations.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody really wanted to study like a baby, like, I don't know, you couldn't do it like for the entire life, but you could pass it over to somebody else that could study it for that, you know, and then I don't know.
If you had enough data, maybe you could get like 99% accuracy, figure out what
you
could do.
Yeah, you could come to close, but I don't think you could ever,
I'm sure.
I won't say ever, but I mean, it's a long ways off before you can completely determine what someone is going to do in future events. Even then, there are still random acts, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not determined that I'm going to have a twitch in my arm.
But is that like a free action, though?
No.
Just because it's not determined.
Right.
So, that's the problem with, like, you think, oh, I'm not determined, therefore I'm free. But then what would that be like, is that really an action, or is that something that's kind of happening to you? It's kind of like if, I don't know, something random happens to you, like, that you didn't cause or you didn't want, like,
There
you go, yeah. So it's like... That's not like free action. Now, if it's something you do, now most of the time when you do something, it's intentional. Well, like an accident, you don't think. Now you can like have a negligent accident, but if you do something that's not on purpose, it's not. I don't know. I guess it's an action. But like a reflex isn't really an action, because you're not consciously, you know, willing something to happen. You're not. You don't have a volition. Now here's an interesting question. And. We're going to knock off a couple minutes early, but I'll leave you with this question. If you don't understand what effects will proceed from your actions, you know, are you free? In other words, if you have a mistaken worldview or mistaken facts about what will happen as a result of your actions, you know, does that mean that you're not free? Or if you just act on what you know based on your desire, and you could have done something else, and you would have done something else if you had known the facts, you know, does that affect your freedom at all? So does your knowledge about the world, does that affect how free you are? And we'll pick up on that on Tuesday. So Tuesday we're going to finish up free will, and I'm going to spend the second hour reviewing for the exam.